Hey everybody, Walking the Floor is made possible today with support from Fender Play. Have you or someone you know been looking to learn how to play the guitar? Well, my friends over at Fender recently introduced Fender Play, the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar, offering on-demand guitar lessons through a video-based platform that's designed to help you play your favorite songs and learn key skills in minutes. For your free trial of Fender Play, visit fender.com/walkingthefloor. All right, let's get to the show.
Hey, this is Brent Cobb, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, señores and señoritas. This is Chris Shiplett, and yes, you are listening to another fine episode of Walking the Floor. What a crazy week it's been. Let me tell you about it. Finished up some Foo Fighter dates last week at Caboo. Had an incredible surf with my buddies in Leucadia. Thank you, Rick DeVoe, for all that tuna fish. I just ate it last night. It was fantastic. Anyway, finished up the Foo shows Friday night. Woke up super early Saturday morning and flew out to Nashville, where I had a gig at Americana Fest. I was like the closing show of Americana Fest at 3rd and Lindsley. So I flew out there, landed that afternoon, jumped off the plane, got a rental car, drove to my hotel, threw my bag in there, shot over to Lightning 100, who was going to be broadcasting the show the next night live. So I went over there, did a quick interview, went and grabbed a sandwich, made it to rehearsal. We ran through the set a couple times with the whole crew for the, you know, most everybody that played on my new record, which was super fun. And after, let me tell you, after playing my songs acoustic by myself for the last several months, what an incredible treat it was to get to play with all those folks. And it sounded unbelievable. So then the next day, I woke up, went over to get my guitars fixed from my man Tom Stradler over there at Carter Vintage. He tuned them all up for me, all killer. Got them ready for the show. Just in time to go make sound check, where we ran through the set one more time and then had an unbelievable show that night. All the whole crew, Jed and everybody from Americana, Music Association Americana Fest, were out. Seemed like they were all happy and relieved. The week was over. It was, I'm sure, a very long week for them, but it was a nice way to end things. And I'd never been to Americana Fest, so I loved every minute of it. It was super, super fun. And I think that I don't know for sure, but I think maybe if you go to Lightning 100's website, you can find the broadcast. I know I did a couple Instagram stories and Facebook stories and stuff like that through the day. So if you want to check out what that sounded like with the crew out there, there is some stuff out there for you to listen to. Also, I should mention that we finally booked a show in Edmonton. Yes, I'm coming to Edmonton to the Starlight Temple Room on October 21st. Ticket links are on my website and probably on their website if you Google it. There's also, don't forget, Kansas City on October 11th at Knuckleheads. There are still some tickets left for that one, so go buy some tickets and I'll see you in Kansas City and Edmonton. I think Detroit and Milwaukee are sold out. So if you didn't get your tickets, you know, just come hang out on the sidewalk outside of the bar. That'll be fun. And I also got some dates with Paul Cawthon. I'm going to be supporting Paul Cawthon down in Texas in November. November 8th in Houston, November 10th in Dallas, November 15th in Austin. And I managed to squeeze in a show on November 9th in San Antonio, opening up for Mr. Dale Watson. So lots of shows in Texas in November. And all those ticket links are up on my website, so check it out, okay? Great. And again, I just wanted to give a big thanks to everybody over at Fender Play for making this episode of Walking the Floor nice and free for you, the listening public. Fender Play is, of course, the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar, available on desktop and mobile, so you can learn anytime, anywhere. I know I just got set up with an account on Fender Play, and I am going to go dive into all their country honky-tonk lessons, and there's a ton of them. So check it out. Get your free trial of Fender Play at fender.com/walkingthefloor. And while we're at it, let's not forget our good friends at Zounds.com. Go to Zounds.com, where every order $599 and above is eligible for their exclusive 12-part payment plan with no application process, no interest charged, ever, and you just pay that first monthly installment and your gear ships immediately. And one last thing, you know, support for Walking the Floor also comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, committed to sustainability through the Playback Program, recycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback Program and how to help in its mission of reaching 2.5 million strings in 2018, please visit playback.d'addario.com. Okay, woo! Let's get on over to today's interview. All right. So I've been trying to line up an interview with Brent Cobb for ages, probably since around the time that he put out his last record. But I think every time he's come through LA, I've been out of town, you know, on the road or somewhere. And it's just never worked out until this past August, when he came through town on the Chris Stapleton Marty Stewart tour, and they played down at the Forum, which was an absolutely amazing night. So much fun, such great music. And I managed to get down there early that day and sit down with Brent during Stapleton soundcheck, actually. So you can hear that going on in the background while we're talking. But we sat in one of those little backstage rooms and had a really good chat. He plays a really cool acoustic version of his song King of Alabama off his latest record, Providence Canyon, which if you haven't listened to, you gotta go listen to. It's fantastic. Leans a little more country funk than the last one. We actually pick up this conversation talking about that. So this is Brent Cobb on Walking the Floor.
You want to jump right in?
Let's do it, man.
Let's just fucking do it.
Okay, so we're sitting here backstage at the Forum, and you're on tour with Chris Stapleton, and your cousin is out here playing with him, and Marty Stewart. But I wanted to jump into, first off, talking about your new record and how it was different this time around. Like, what were the differences between making this one? Because it sounds different to me. It's got a different vibe to it than the last one. But what sort of influenced the making this record that changed
you know, we did the whole, Chris had us out last year as well, and so we did the whole tour last year. First time I've ever played venues that could hold 20,000 people, and just being out there and around that, I just wanted a little more energy in this record. And I'd been listening to a lot of this dude, Larry John Wilson, from Swainsboro, Georgia.
Wilson.
Yeah, dude, if you hadn't heard it, he's got these, did like two records in the early 70s that are super country funk based.
Right.
Like his lyrics are some of the countryest content I've ever heard.
And that's funny. I remember when I was out recording with Dave, you know, a few months ago, he told me, it was before I'd heard your record, and he's like, we made a fucking country funk record.
That's what we've been trying to do. That's what we tried to do on Shine on Rainy Day also, but, you know, I think we'll continue to reach for the country funk album. I don't know if we've made it happen yet, but
what to you would be like the pinnacle of the holy grail of country funk?
In my opinion,
records?
Well, you know, there's a compilation disc called Country Funk from the early 70s, but there's this record from Delbert McClinton and Glenn Clark. It's called the Delbert and Glenn Sessions from 71 to 73.
Right.
Super hard to find. Amoeba has it, I know. But other than that,
I think that Dave actually sent me that.
He better have. And he better give me credit for that, too.
I don't think he did.
I know. Well, no. I know he didn't, because I remember telling right when he had moved to Nashville, we were riding around in the truck, and he wasn't even moved there, I don't think, yet.
You know,
I had already moved there. And I was like, man, check this out. Delbert McClinton and Glenn Clark sessions. It's awesome. Played it for him. Well, then he moved to town like a year or two later. Get in the truck. He's like, man, you got to check this stuff out. Sturgill showed me. I was like, motherfucker.
I showed you that. Okay, so Dave also turned me on to that White Mansions record years ago. Who really turned him on to that then? Was that you?
I think that was Shooter, but I could be wrong.
Sure, that would make sense. Yeah. I mean, when you go in to make a record, do you sort of have an overall vision for it?
Sort of. You know how it is. It's more, for me, it's more of an emotion. I don't know if it's a vision I don't know if I see a whole picture, you right. know, but I definitely have a themed emotion.
Well, it's funny because before we made the record that I just made with mm-hmm. with Dave, I went out to dinner with him, you know, a few months prior to that. And he goes, you know, I think for this record, you need to play a Marshall JCM 800.
Totally.
On the whole record. Like, that's if
the,
that's you know,
gonna be the same.
Play humbuckers yeah. through it. He's like, you know, play like gritty tone, but like, you know, it's like country rock, but like with the big guitars.
Yeah.
And that, and then, you know, I was kind of like, whoa, you know, because I kind of live in big guitar land. You
totally.
Know what I mean? So for me, like my solo stuff is usually a place to try things that I don't normally get to do, but we went with it, you know, and I'm glad we did. But and I didn't know if you went in with a similar sort of game
that's
plan, you know.
Totally the way he does. That's what he's always been so great at, you know. It's like this time he's like, we need to get Mike Harris, who plays guitar with me, on the whole record. He needs to be on the whole record, and then that'll be, you know, it's like that Dwight Yoakam and Pete Anderson thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what we wanted to do with this album, is make it feel like, you know, this is the band right here, man.
Sure, yeah. You Who know? Was the rhythm section on it?
It was Chris Powell and
Brian,
and then Mike came in and played electric on it.
And Charlie Worsham.
Charlie Worsham came
too,
in,
right?
Man. Did you have Charlie on here a little while
I haven't
ago?
Yet, but I plan on it.
He's great.
I will at some point.
They had never met one another, and we just threw them in the studio the night that they, what you hear on there is them first meeting one another. Hadn't even said hey or anything.
Really?
Yeah, we wanted to scare the shit out of them, and then it was awesome. So.
That's amazing. Yep. I mean, how does that work? Like, as a solo artist,
mm-hmm.
is that an awkward conversation with your band, that I'm going to make this record and maybe one guy from the touring thing's coming and then not
it
the
is.
Whole team?
Or? I look at it, you know, in the Nashville way of things.
That's normal.
And traditionally, the country music way of things, that's the way that it kind of
right.
goes. And Dave is that guy now. And I mean, I've been working with Chris Powell and Brian Allen since 06, you know, since I first met Dave, like since we did our first record together.
Oh, those guys played on your first record?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, why is that not available? Like
it,
in Spotify
it will be
stuff.
Again. I just didn't want to confuse anybody.
Right.
You know,
why? Is it stylistically different, or?
I don't know. I think you can kind of, if you were to go back and get No Place Left to Leave, you would definitely hear some of the elements of what's happening now. My songwriting was there, but I was trying to sing like Shooter back in those days, which is like my first.
It was like before you had sort of found
your voice. I was like 18 years old. You know, I didn't really. I think I had my voice, and then when I get in the studio to make a professional record, I was like, oh, I got to
sing like somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how the pros
man.
Do it, man.
Yep.
Why was there such a big gap between that record and the first one you did with Dave?
I came out here and lived in L.A. for a short stint. I went for a year and a half. I lived on Willoughby and Vine for like 4 months.
Were you playing around town and kind of doing
Yeah,
the
we had
thing?
A residency at the Mint, and I of course played
with
the Viper
who?
Room. It was us. It was my band.
This
not
same
not
band.
This
oh,
no,
okay,
it was
okay.
me. It was right. Me and Rowdy, Jason Cope, who plays with the Steelwoods now. Leroy would come sit in. Chris Powell played drums with us.
Oh no shit.
Yeah.
Wow, so you do go way back with Chris.
Yeah. And so the ultimate goal is to use my band now on the next record,
right.
you know, I hope. But at the same time, I trust Dave and those guys so much, and these guys understand that too, you know.
Right. So you came out here and made that first record, and then what? What were you doing between? Because it's like a 10-year gap or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah. I came here, it was a little different for me. I'm from rural southwest Georgia, population 1,609. I moved right in the middle of Hollywood, decided not
culture,
for me. I want to go to Nashville. Because I had met Luke Bryan in the meantime with that first record Dave and I did, and
how did you hook up with him? And was he successful? Was he like
he was about to be? His first single had not quite been released yet, but he had that Billy Currington single. It was his first number one as a songwriter, so he was on the rise. Especially,
so he was a songwriter too.
Mm-hmm.
That was how his in.
Yep, and especially in our area, he was, because he's from like 45 minutes south of where I'm from in Georgia.
Oh, really?
So my old cover band I played in, Mile Marker 5, had opened some shows for him in Georgia, and he got a hold of that record, kept inviting me to come to Nashville, and I finally did. And you know, all my heroes had sort of always staff wrote on Music Row, you know,
right.
everybody that I, Willie Nelson, Roger Miller, Jerry Reed, you know, all those
yeah.
folks. And so I always kind of entertained the thought of being able to do that someday. And then the opportunity presented itself, and so I made the move to Nashville in March of 08 and got a publishing deal and just started writing on the road every day, and that turned into me living in Nashville for 10 years. And
throughout that time that you were working as a songwriter in Nashville and on Music Row, were you also out playing shows and sort of trying to make it as a solo artist?
I was slightly. I put an EP out in 2012, and the year before that I did the Willie Nelson Country Throwdown Tour as a songwriter, as a Bluebird songwriter.
Mm.
They had a little Bluebird tent set up. So I was touring, and then when we put that EP out, I was doing around 120 dates a year for 5 years, four years.
Who put that record out?
That was my publishing company. It's Carnival Music Publishing, but they also have a record label side of it.
Okay.
And
is that like does the Nashville business side of things, the music industry side, like the writers to eventually become solo artists, or is that frowned upon, or is it?
I think how's they that do. Work? I don't know if they know what they like. I don't know. And, the first question I ever got asked was, "So, are you more of a writer or more of an artist?"
Right.
And I'm like,
which answer is going to get me this publishing deal?
That's what I'm talking about. What's going to put some money in my pocket? And I didn't know how to answer that. I was like, well, I write them and I sing them, and I don't know. I guess I'm both. And
I'm always kind of fascinated by guys like you. Or, you know, Chris Stapleton's right. A good example of this. Or, Kendall Marvel. Guys who go out and play
Kendall.
More rootsy music, but have had success writing for mainstream mm-hmm. country artists. I always wonder how that works. Like,
I wonder the same thing. I bet Willie Nelson was wondering that, too. And, you know, he didn't have his own personal hit as, you know, him singing it till he was, like, what, mid-40s?
Right.
You know, but it's the same story over and over. I don't know why Music Row has such a hard time with singer-songwriters.
Right.
Artists.
You were getting out on the road that whole time.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask you, like, it's silly to say, like, you know, you're an emerging artist or a developing artist. I mean, in a sense, you are, like, commercially
totally.
Or whatever. But, like, you know, you're also a veteran and been doing this for a long time.
I tell
time.
Everybody, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but no, I say every night on stage, it's taken me about 12 years to get to the bottom, and I'm just glad to be here. So that's the mentality.
The only one way to go.
That's it, man.
How does a young developing artist make a name for himself in these days? Like, do you get mainstream radio support at all, or
no.
Is it all road? Is it all touring?
It's all touring, yeah. Well, luckily we got the Chris Stapleton tour. That helps a lot.
Sure.
But
you have, like, a reputation. I read up on a few things about you, and they constantly kind of reference, like, Road Dog, you know, Brent Cobb,
oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
I think that's it, though. I think you know. I mean, the longer, it seems like the people who last the longest usually are who will get... You get something after a while. I don't know
right.
if it'll all be worth it.
But. How has that affected your songwriting? Like, how, like, making records and being on the road a ton,
mm-hmm.
how has that made your songwriting evolve, like the process of songwriting?
I don't know, man. Being back on the road, it's easier definitely to write. My normal hours of creativity are between midnight and about 4 o'clock in the morning. So when I'm home with wife and kid, it's hard to work those hours, you know,
right.
'Cause no matter what, you got to be up 6 o'clock in the morning. So being on the road has kind of allowed me to do that a little more, just write naturally and not co-write everything, you know.
Right. Do you do a lot of co-writes?
I did. Hmm. Well, still have some folks come out on the road and do a little co-writing.
Do you have, like, a crew of guys that you've
yeah,
come
you know,
with that you've,
you get right. your buddies that you love and
yeah.
you don't mind calling assholes and, you know,
telling them their idea's stupid
and or vice versa.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a funny feeling in those rooms when
yeah.
when you're the guy that's like, why don't we write a song about a fish with a horn in its head and the thing, and everyone just goes,
what
else you got?
The first time I ever wrote with Chris Stapleton about 7 years ago, I walk in and I have an idea about a dog named Rastus. Never met Chris before, of course.
You know, that was my grandpa's dog's name.
Rastus?
Well, it was Raspus.
Okay, that's close.
Yeah, close enough.
Well, I walk in, and I have a cool little melody on the guitar, you know, a little run, and I'm like, yeah, man, I got this idea about a dog named Rastus, and Chris looks at me, and he's like, I don't know if I feel like writing a song about a dog today. Whatever you want, buddy.
Okay, how about this other one about my girlfriend?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you, I like. I've been asking people this question a lot lately because we've been touring so much this last year and, mm-hmm. and change, and we have a good. A lot of the guys on our road crew play soccer, and I'm a soccer nut, and uh-huh. so on days off, that's we go rent a pitch somewhere, and we get 10 or 20 guys together, and we have pickup games, you know. And that's sort of like my favorite thing to do on tour, to sort of stay sane,
right.
stay kind of active, to just get your mind out of the sort of monotony of being on the road.
Right.
Do you have anything like that, hobbies, anything you do to sort of keep together?
We started this year staying at KOAs instead of hotel rooms.
No shit.
Instead of parking lots. So, yeah, I love fires, and I like throwing horseshoes.
Wow.
And I like to grill, so... Well, that's what we do. Any off days we have, we're at a KOA somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
What? How do you sort of figure that out?
That guy right there, the tour manager.
You ever pull up and you're like, this one sucks.
Yeah,
Let's
I mean,
get the
there's
fuck
been
out
a,
of here.
For the most part,
because it's tough with camping, I find, unless you have an inn, like you know the spot, and you know where the good
right.
spot, even within, you know, whatever the park you're in.
Yeah.
It can be tough. You can
KOAs,
be like, oh, fuck,
KOAs
right next
have
to the
been
bathroom.
Pretty consistent, though. You
okay.
know? Yeah, it's... It's been really nice. If you're listening, KOA, we could use the help.
Let's back up a little bit. Like where you mentioned it a minute ago, but where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southwest Georgia, Ellaville, Georgia.
What's that close to?
3 hours south of Atlanta, Columbus,
okay.
Georgia.
And what was that like?
It was like Mayberry a little bit. You know, it really was.
And did you move back there recently? Did I
yeah,
hear
we
that?
Just moved back. We actually live in Cobb, Georgia now.
No shit.
Is, yeah, right down the road.
Is it Cobb, Georgia because of somebody in your family
no
like
relation.
200 years ago? No.
No, we've looked it up, you know.
Really? Yeah. That's funny.
No key to the city yet.
How is that moving back?
It's wonderful, man. I was only gone for 12 years, but it's my wife is from there and I'm from there and we
right.
got the whole family's around, and they're
doing
with their daughter. And
I always thought we were going to move back to where my wife and I came from, which is, you know, about an hour and a half up north.
Right.
Up that way. And I always thought, you know, before we had kids, we'd wind up back in our hometown, and
right.
then that didn't happen. You know, now my kids are, like, locked into school. So that's, like, I'm so jealous of that story.
Well, it's what I've always, a lot of folks want to escape where they're from. I was never liked that. I always liked where I was from, and I always planned to be back down there someday if I could be.
Did you keep a connection, like, with friends and all that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was also kind of what's nice about growing up a millennial, I guess you could say, is we were disconnected from the world. We're like the last generation to be disconnected from the whole world, but then we also came of age connected to the whole world,
right?
You know, and so we're able to, yeah, I keep in touch with my first best friend ever, you know, still lives down there, and it was an easy move back,
right? How old were you when you started playing?
I grew up around it, but 12 was when I was really writing and playing.
You grew up around it, like in what way?
My dad plays. He still plays in a band. He performs. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, it was already always like a secondary source of income in my
what kind of stuff?
His stuff was more like 50s and 60s rock and roll and
really.
He's big Chuck Berry dude.
So like, what were you listening to as a young kid that made you want to pick up a guitar and
Chuck
sing?
Chuck Berry and Tom T. Hall and. I always loved Tom Petty, of course. The Drifters, all that old stuff. Yeah, the first time I ever performed, I was 7 with him. There's this place used to be called the Silver Moon in Buena Vista, Georgia. And they had Chubby Checker came through and George Jones and Doug Stone. And I met all these people because my dad's band would always be the house band to open for them. And I just always grew up around it, you know. It's part of my makeup. I don't know how to do anything else.
Where was, like, or when was the, when did it hit you that, like, no, this is what I want to do? This is what I want my life to be.
I don't know. I've always felt, kind of always felt like I would do it, but I didn't have any drive to leave either, you know?
Right. You and Dave didn't know each other when you were real young, right?
Nope. His dad was only Cobb that left Richland, Georgia, and never came back. So they moved to Savannah. And Dave's 12 years older than I am or so.
Okay.
And he and Shooter were the reason that that gave me a reason to finally go, man, I guess I could maybe do this for a living. I didn't know how to even start it.
Were you aware that he was off making records and,
nope,
and playing music?
I had no idea. No, not until his grandmother, my great aunt's funeral, and we're all musical in my family, word gets around that Dave is this LA record producer. And so my little arrogant ass was, we're all standing around at his grandmother's funeral. This sounds awful. And I asked him, I hear you're an LA record producer. What you produce, man? You know? And he said, Shooter Jennings put the O back in country, and it floored me. And that's really what started it all. I gave him a little 6-song acoustic demo that he did not want to listen to, because no one ever wants to listen to their cousin's demo that they get at a funeral.
Or anybody's demo, for that
You don't
matter,
really
want
to listen to demos, man. Yeah, it's not fun. I didn't know that rule. And gave him a little demo, and 2 days later, I guess he was reluctant to hear it, and his wife talked him into it on the way to Atlanta. He was like, let's listen to your little cousin's demo.
Yeah.
And no, no, no. And then he finally did, and 2 days later, I was working up for a tree service crew, and I got off work. Me and my buddy, we got super stoned. The house phone rings, the old wall phone. Still living at my folks' house. I'm answering, it's Dave and Shooter, and they wanted to fly me out here and do a record. And that's really what, until then, I didn't know how to pursue it.
Were you like, I fucking made it?
I felt like William, the Rolling Stone kid journalist from Almost Famous.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I remember when Dave first told me about you, he referred to you as the redneck Paul Simon.
Shit.
Which I'm guessing you've probably heard before, but what would you call him?
Oh, man. I'm not good at stuff like that. He's a
genius. This is your chance to fucking claw it back, baby.
He's just a genius. I don't know any. He's Dave Cobb. He's amazing, man.
Does that ever get awkward, like making records with family and then also putting records out? You know, because you're on his label as well, right?
Yeah, little. You know, sometimes.
Do you ever have to like ring him up? Like, you didn't. The promo in Cincinnati was fucked up.
We stay creative. You know, there's other people to blame for that. It's always been a creative relationship.
Yeah,
he's also an only child. You know, which kind of. I don't know if I trust only children and cousins who has so much control over my career. But
oh, that's funny.
Been good so far.
Yeah, only child. That says something.
You got to watch them, man. Yeah. Now you know, see?
Do you want to play a song?
Sure. Do you have a... You got one you would like me to play, or just anything? Yeah, whatever
you're feeling, man.
All right, cool.
Oh, before we do that, I got one. Well, you can grab your guitar, but I got one more question, because I'm doing like a Fender's coming on as like a title sponsor for my podcast.
Hell yeah.
So that'll be great. But they're doing this Fender Play app platform thing that's like online music lessons. So I just wanted to ask you about music lessons. Like,
okay,
were you a guy that took a lot of music lessons growing up? Was that a thing for you, or were you more self-taught?
No, it was more self-taught. Okay. My dad would just show me like a chord here and a chord there and tell me to work on it until I learned it, and he'd show me another one.
What about now? You ever jump in there?
You
don't live in Nashville, but living in Nashville for so long with such a ridiculous wealth of talent
I wish I knew better theory and the language of music, I'd probably feel more comfortable about just jamming, you know?
Right.
And I get a little insecure.
That's funny you say that, because that is something that I really regret about my own sort of, you know, teenage years of playing. I came up at a time when, and I grew up in like a hippie town, so this hippie shit was all over the place, so that naturally you just fucking hated anything that reeked of patchouli any way.
Yeah.
And jamming very much fell into that category. So jamming was not part of our musical identity as kids at all.
Yeah.
And now I love to, like, I just went and sat in with Amanda Shires a couple nights ago and just had never heard the song.
That's awesome.
Just like noodling leads on super clean tone, just like channeling my inner Jerry Garcia. It was so killer.
Yes.
I never get to do that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's good.
On that end, let's hear you jam.
I'm going to try my best here.
Here, I'm going to move this over here to get your... If you want to intro it at all,
You know, this is... This, well, Brent Cobb here in the studio. Where are we at? We're at the
Fabulous Forum.
The Fabulous Forum. That is right.
Former home of the Lakers.
That's right. I'm going to do a song called "The King of Alabama" about a good friend of mine named Wayne Mills. Wayne was a honky tonk hero of sorts. He's no longer with us. He used to play for Alabama. He played for the Tide football, which is a big deal down south. I say this because there are many people probably worthy of the crown that is the King of Alabama, but he had all the boxes checked. People like Jamie Johnson used to open shows for Wayne Mills. Blake Shelton used to open shows for Wayne. He died the night of the George Jones tribute show in Nashville, and he left behind a 7-year-old son and a wife. And a couple of days after all this happened, I was thinking about his son growing up without his daddy, because my wife was pregnant with our daughter at the time. And I started writing this song, and I wound up finishing it with a guy I met through Wayne, Adam Hood, who's also a great artist. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he writes for Dave. But anyway, when we got done writing it, I asked him what he'd think about maybe adding Wayne's son as a co-writer to it, because I never would have started writing this song had it not been for the thought of his son. And he thought it was a great idea, and we sent, you know, this song over to Wayne's widow and asked her permission. We didn't want to be insensitive or anything like that, but, you know, if they'd be into that, what would they think? And she loved it, and we got her permission, and so his son is now a third co-writer on this song. So any little bit that it might make, a third of it's going to go straight to them, to Wayne's old publishing company. Anyway,
that's amazing.
So here's King Alabama. Well, I didn't know him best, but he'd say we were friends. We both rode the highways on a song. So I'm riding this one here in memory of him, 'cause the King of Alabama has gone home. He was a man among men, the old school kind, had a great big heart, a laid back mind, let you hold his guitar if you broke a string, if you thought he looked country, ought to heard him sing. From Alabama across the Rio Grande, he beat the black top down with the five piece band. Not because he loved it, he did that too, but he did it, man, 'cause that's what he was born to do. Well, some people calculate moves, he never had a thing to prove. He just let the wind take him where it may. Yeah. Well, it's a damn shame the way things go. It's too bad we have to lose a good foe. But the King of Alabama has gone home.
Get that late night in Anaheim out of my throat this morning.
Now nothing good ever happens after midnight, so the story goes. You can't trust nobody, it don't matter how close. It was a friend that took him from his family. I keep his chain in my pocket, his son in my prayers, every stage I'm on, I can feel him there. Well, some people calculate moves, he never had a thing to prove. He just let the wind take him where it may. Yeah, well, it's a damn shame the way things go. It's too bad we have to lose a good foe. But the King of Alabama has gone home. Some people calculate moves, see, Never had a thing to prove. He just let the wind take him where it may. It's like honky tonk's a trick. Now get a guitar and grab your pick. Let them old tunes possess you and play with us. Damn shame the way things go. It's too bad we have to lose a good foe. The king of Alabama, the king of Alabama, the king of Alabama has gone home. Oh, look at that beautiful ending right there.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Oh, dude, thanks for, I'm glad we've been trying to do this for like a year.
For a while now. I don't know, I'm glad.
You heard the home fire ain't burning.
All right, that was Brent Cobb on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get out there and listen to his latest album, Providence Canyon. He's probably on the road, probably coming to a town near you. Buy his tickets, buy his t-shirts, stream his music. And while you're at it, make sure you get on over to walkingthefloor.com. And I'm going to post a bunch of links so you can check out exactly what Brent Cobb is all about and what he's up to. Okay, thanks again to Fender Play for all their support. If any of you listeners are interested in learning to play guitar without the usual hurdles, check out a free trial by visiting fender.com/walkingthefloor. When you're done with that, make sure you get on over to the iTunes Store or Spotify or wherever it is you stream your podcast and listen to all the old episodes of Walking the Floor. They're all up there forever. And you can go to Spotify and follow our Walking the Floor playlist, the greatest playlist in the history of honky tonk. All right, that's all I got for this week. This is Chris Shiflett saying adios, amigos.